Hey, welcome back to the CCWSA podcast. I'm Mike Darter in Oklahoma City, here with Stan Campbell.
That's right. Stan Campbell's here.
Stan Campbell's now in Oklahoma City full-time, which is awesome to have him here. We got a great guest on today, Bill Patton. Bill Patton is currently a major with the police department here in the area, and he used to be one of my partners. We'll try to talk about some things.
There's some things you can talk about, some things that you can't.
That's right. So what's going on, Stan?
I just got back. I had a quick run to Los Angeles this past week, and did the Firing Line radio show down in San Bernardino. We had a special guest. That's with Phil Naiman, of course. I had a special guest, Andrew Branca, attorney Andrew Branca from Law of Self-Defense. So he and I did a episode that we're going to play. We're going to replay this Saturday so you guys can hear it. But we talked about a lot of things, and that guy's so smart.
Oh, Branca? Yeah.
Yeah, Branca, yeah. I call him the godfather of self-defense law. If you have a chance, check him out, lawselfdefense.com. A lot of great information.
Yeah, and we've got a bunch of videos that are going to be coming out. Justin, are those coming out soon with from SHOT?
Yep.
So we had SHOT Show. Don and Andrew got together, and I think we had some really good video.
Oh, my God. Just great information. I mean, you got two – I'm pretty much the nation's best, in reference to the knowledge of self-defense and the experience of working cases, deadly force cases, and, capital cases, capital murder cases. So, they really produce for us, and we got a lot of information out of them. So I'm really happy about it.
Good. Last week we had on Rob High, which was a use of force expert. That was a cool conversation that we had.
Yeah, it was.
So today's going to be another one.
It's so easy when our guests are also friends and people that we've done things with. So we have a lot of memories together, and we pick and choose our friends wisely on the police department.
Yeah.
And it's usually the same type, really hard charging. All about taking care of the citizens and taking care of business.
Excellent. And we were a lot younger, too.
We were so much younger. Yeah. That was 100 pounds ago for me. Don't judge me.
So the whole deal with Bill, how this got started in this topic, we're going to talk today about escalation and how fast things can escalate. And it kind of got started with Bill sent me this video. Justin, can you play that video? So he sent me this video last week, and so here it is. You might have seen this video. It's a collegiate football player somewhere.
I believe so.
But they get into it. Escalates pretty quickly, picks this guy up, tries to do a body slam. Luckily, the guy kind of got his foot down and controlled it. But he sent this to me with just a message, Santoy, which is – somebody we had arrested in the past, and we started laughing. I talked to him, and I said, hey, this would be a good podcast to talk about escalation and the importance to de-escalate, but also the importance not to even really get involved. But let's talk about this incident as Bill shifts his eyes to me in this look. So we got into this incident with the suspect named Santoy, which we knew, and Fat Roy. And it was Fat Roy is the one. So we were driving. So I'll admit, I was always and I had some great partners that I worked with at Oklahoma City. I was always a guy that was kind of like, hey, let's go to lunch and let's do this and let's. And Bill was always guys like, oh, there's a tag, there's an expired tag, we're going after it. And I was like, I'm hungry, I want to eat. And then we get into this awesome, pursuit or foot chase or whatever. And it was a day like this, and we were going, I think we were actually going to eat.
We were.
Somewhere. And Fat Roy passed us, and Bill immediately keyed on. There's Fat Roy. You want to tell him about Fat Roy? What?
Yeah, Fat Roy was a real large individual, hence his nickname. He dealt dope, man. He had a habit of hiding the dope under his fat rolls. And we caught him one time on a traffic stop, and he didn't have a license, so he was arrested, and we were searching him. and he actually, like I said, he had all the fat rolls, dope under it, and money under his fat rolls. You just lift them up, and they would come out. And he never denied being it. He said he would go to court, and his defense would be that he's too fat to get hired by anybody. They'd feel they wouldn't hire him, so that's the only way he could make money, and that was his defense. He told us
that's
that.
Not a bad
it's
defense.
Not a bad
it's really
defense.
Not a bad idea. I mean, yeah. Well, that's what he said, and he stuck with it. So we knew he was an avid dope dealer, and he had been a dope dealer for years. And, you know, back then when we got him, we also had his phone, and his phone kept going off, and we kept just ordering deliveries to certain spots through his phone because they would call all the time. Well, that's how we recognized him, because he was a known dope dealer to us. So we decided to turn and see what we could do with him. Well, naturally, as soon as we turned around on him, he zipped into the side street. We went in, conducted a traffic stop on him because we knew he didn't have a license, never had. And Mike went to the driver's side, Fat Roy, and I went to the passenger side, and it was a guy we've never seen before. I've never seen him before. So we asked him to step out. He didn't. I brought him back to me, and I was conducting a cursory frisk on him, and and I felt his arm, and it was enormous. He was a big,
like
big, muscled up dude. I was like, so I looked over at Mike. We knew Fat Roy wasn't gonna like run from us. So
yeah.
So I gave Mike the look like, hey, we need you over here. So he came over, and he had one side. And Mike and I are fairly skilled, and this guy did a little spin move. He had Mike in one arm and me in the other. He actually lifted me off the ground, which set
he
which
hip checked Bill onto the car,
and then boom,
and like pinned me against the car. I was trying to headbutt him, and I couldn't headbutt him. Bill was trying to kick him. Bill actually started laughing at one point.
I couldn't stop laughing because it was. I knew he couldn't hurt us at this time because he had both arms locked up. But it was broad daylight. 4:30, 5 o'clock, and there's people on the porch watching this happen, and he had me pinned against the car, and I couldn't move, and I looked over at Mike, and he couldn't move. I'm like, Mike, I can't move. He goes, neither can I. I was laughing. He was laughing. And
this little lady, remember the lady stepped out on our porch?
Yeah.
Some little lady stepped out on our porch. She said, what's going on out here? And he said, call the sheriff. They harassing me.
Yeah.
Bill said, could you call the police, too?
We couldn't move. The only reason we got out of there because he let us go and took off running.
Yeah.
And we ended up chasing down, and then he dumped some dope, and then he gave up peacefully, thank goodness.
Yeah.
Because he was a handful.
Was that the first time you met with
that's
that guy?
First time we ever met him, yeah.
Was it the last time?
No. I met him again about 5 years later when I was on patrol by myself. And that was a whole different story.
Yeah.
Do you want me to go into that?
Yeah.
That was a story. I pulled him over for speeding through an area called the Highlands. And it's a residential area, high crime, a lot of blood gang members. And I stopped him because he was well over the speed limit. I went up to him. He didn't have a driver's license. I took him out, and I was talking to him, like, because you try to talk to him and de-escalate him because he was kind of nervous. I said, listen, you know, I'm not going to take you all the way to the jail for no driver's license, man. I'm just making sure you're good to go, and then we'll be on our way.
Yeah.
So that calmed down a little bit, and as I'm pat searching him, I felt his arm, and I said, dude, this is a big dude. This is that dude. So, and I asked him, I said, hey, you have been arrested before? He goes, yeah, by some undercovers, but you would know him. And I thought, that was me and Mike. So at that point, I realized, hey, this is not anyone to joke around with. So I convinced him to get in my car because my deal is once you get in the car and I shut the door, I got him contained. I can get some backup if I needed it. Correct. I just didn't want him one-on-one out front.
And one thing with Oklahoma City, we had cages.
Yes.
Yeah. Some departments don't have cages. We had cages.
So right. So that was my strategy. It was after I checked him for weapons, he didn't have any. I got him in the car. Shut the door. He kept trying to come out. But in that neighborhood, the neighbors kept coming out, and it turned into a scene. So I made the decision that I'm going to take him to the jail. And before I take him out of the car in the jail, I'm going to handcuff him and take him upstairs. But at least I have him contained in there.
Yeah.
So I got to the jail. He was chilled out, real, real mellow, which is, you know, something that's odd. But he is super calm. Got him in the car. I had him put his feet up, lean forward, put his hand behind his back before I opened the door. I was going to handcuff him that way. Told him, you know, hey, I had to handcuff just so my super doesn't get mad at me if I take you upstairs. You know, give him a line. So he leaned over, put his hand behind his back. I opened the door, went to cuff him, and he pushed off that door out, and it was on. And then he took off running, so I chased him into an alley, and he knew where he was going. Went into this alley between these businesses and down to a real dark area, and then he just stopped. He said, I'm not going back to jail. And then it was on from there. We started hooking it up a little bit. Got a hold of my gun. I was holding it. He spun it in front of him.
Whoa.
he spun around, so I was behind him, like, riding him, and he had my gun. He was trying to point my gun back at me to shoot me with it. Round went off into the ground, and I just held it tight, so I figured it's not gonna. I'm not going to let it go back to battery that way.
Yeah.
In case he does get it, because he's a large dude, and we fought for a bunch. Midwest City officer saw it, saw me running, and he came over to find us.
Yeah.
And when he found us, he saw the guy, and it was, we were wrestling with the gun. I yelled, hey, he's trying to get my gun. We're fighting it out. And he decided he didn't want to shoot because it was such a fluid fight.
Correct.
He was afraid to hit me, I guess. And so he took his ass out and he went to town on the guy. But he, when he went in for that first one, Santoy kind of flinched a little bit. He hit him, and Santoy goes, that didn't hurt. And then he was super committed to getting away. He did not want to go to jail. That's exactly what he said. And,
yeah.
And he put it on him for that for a while. And the fight ended up going for a good distance. He kept reattacking the weapon. At one point, I tried to fire again. Because he reattacked, and it clicked because it never went to – he was holding on to it. So I had to get it back from him again, tap rack, and then approach again. By that time, we continued on, and I ended up having to shoot him, which stopped it.
Now, did he have – did he pick – what?
He picked up a large rock, and he tried to attack the other officer with it.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So I got it close enough, and I just close combated him twice.
And then he just sat down at that point.
When he sat down, yeah, he just, well, he didn't sit down immediately. He got two rounds into me. He said, deep breath. He goes, I'm done. And then he sat down.
Wow.
Yeah. I was like, whew, that's that guy that you dream about that just won't stop.
Yeah, you know, and that's one of the things that we talked about last week with Rob High is that, you know, you have to be prepared to meet that guy. It doesn't happen too often in your lifetime. Or sometimes it happens a couple of times, you know, if you in the right profession. But you got to be prepared for that guy. But, you know, all the things that you're talking about, there's so many things, you know. Number one, we tell these stories like it's just another day. But first of all, he had to have the right mindset. So the whole time that Bill is talking about this, he's talking about being prepared. He's talking about de-escalating them, you know, trying not to get – I mean, he's already dealt with this guy before. Mm-hmm. He's keeping himself calm. He's trying to get him into an area where, you know, trying to, you know, put handcuffs on him to you know, control him. He has to be physically fit to be able to, you know, deal with a fight like this. So, you know, that too is important. And then, you know, not giving up because although – I mean, you guys already explained this guy twice, and you see who we're dealing with. Not only is he, you know, rock hard in reference to his muscles, but, I mean, he's fit, he's engaged, and he's committed. And when you run into Absolutely. That guy, you also have to be committed. So you got to be able to turn it on just like that. So, I mean, I really commend you on that. I mean, there's a lot of lessons within just that one story.
Oh, yeah.
And I was fortunate enough that I had recently got out of the Oklahoma City Custody and Control Instructor School with you. Mm-hmm. It was – we graduated – wasn't too long after that than this incident happened. So yeah. I was – really fresh on the training,
yeah,
especially weapons retention, which is really important.
Correct.
And getting the weapon back. I actually used one of the techniques to get the weapon out of his hand. I still had a hold of it, but I used one of those techniques taught. So it was, you know, besides the fear, you know, I had that worry, you know, if he gets it, I'm in deep trouble.
Yeah.
But like most cops, I was thinking more on the lines of, I can't let him get my gun because I just got out of CDT instructor school.
I'd be embarrassed if he shoots off my big toe.
No kidding. I'm like, I'm not going to have that. So that was one of the driving factors also. Is besides, you know, fear for my life, I was a fear of my friends.
Yeah.
How's that happen? You just got out of the instructor school.
Pride is a motherfucker, too.
Yeah, no doubt.
It's a motivator.
No doubt about it.
It's a motivator.
It's weird that you think about that type of situation, too, but that's one of the things that's going through my mind.
Yeah.
It's like, I ain't letting this happen.
No, and that was your first shooting, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Have you had another after?
I was involved in a really big deal. I didn't necessarily shoot. The officer with me shot.
Yes.
But I was in a position. We had a position. It was a multi-hom. He basically killed a bunch of people in a house and then had a hostage. And we didn't know he was in there until we got in there.
Mm-hmm.
And we just saw the dead bodies, and there he was. And then he kind of got the jump on me initially, and we backed out, and I set up in a position in case he came down the hall, and the other officer had a good barricade position inside the bathtub, and that officer made the shot. So, yeah.
That's awesome. Well, you know, Bill and I've never worked with Mike. We worked around each other. We miss each other every time. We've been best friends since the day that we got hired.
Academy, yeah.
Yeah, since the first day of the academy, and But Bill and I worked around each other. We weren't partners per se, but we commanded, you know, the same group. I had an impact group. He had an impact group, so street crime unit. And also we were on a SWAT together.
We were tactical.
Yes, we were a tactical team together. You know, he's on the assault side. I was on counter sniper side. Now, I might have been on the assault side for a little bit with you as well, right?
Yeah, a little bit. And then you went to counter sniper.
And then I went to the counter sniper side. And, you know, I mean, just people don't realize, and I said this before, but, I mean, I really stand behind this because it's real. And I know, Bill, you can, you know, agree with me. You know, those who are trained the best use less force.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
I mean, they have. And that's why, you know, for you guys, you got to keep getting out there and training because it's important to continue your training, you know, elevate yourself, you know, seek out, you know, other instructors with more experience than you. Deal with some real life training as well. Gun retention is really important. People, you don't realize it until you actually need it. Mm-hmm. You know, Bill, you know, I mean, just like he talked about, you know, gun retention. I mean, just having the thought of mind to not try to correct it and leave
right.
it out of battery,
right,
you know,
right.
just in case this guy gets it. So, you know, you got a split second and he won't get that shot off.
Right.
I mean, that's important to know. But, you know, you have to be able to remain calm and deal with those things. So, I mean, this is crazy. The amount of people that, you know, we've been in, like, hundreds and hundreds of violent encounters and the amount of people that we could have taken their lives, but because of our, you know, our training and falling back on it and, you know, having, you know, patience in the situation and scenario, you know, knowing that we can get out of this and we use our heads most of the time to get out of it. I mean, we really, really get through a lot and make sure that, you know, using deadly force is a last resort.
I think a perfect example is that we were on, as you mentioned, we were on the tactical unit together, which is equivalent to SWAT and most other deals.
Mm-hmm.
And the 20 years I was on the team, we only had one shooting. Mm-hmm. That was fatal.
Correct. And I was with 10, and same thing.
Right.
Only one shooting.
One shooting, and it was because we got everybody in custody using tactics and de-escalation techniques. And de-escalation is a myriad of things, you know, less lethal involved in that. But that's how we do it. Superior tactics, superior training.
Absolutely.
Usually overcomes it.
Yeah. So, hey, I got a Bill Patton story.
Oh,
and it's not that bad. It's not that bad.
It's going to be an ambush.
No. It's not that bad. It's not a bad story. You know, we were on impact together. And a lot of times he was in another division. And I was on the east side of town. And I would invite his unit over when I have a big deal, which I usually have a lot of those.
Yes,
sometimes I have up to 70 officers on some things. Sometimes we'll have U-Hauls. We'll jump out with like 20 officers in the U-Haul. Ice cream truck, just everything. So, you know, I like, you know, just being unique. But one time we had to hit a house side by side, so it was a duplex, and I invite Bill and his team over. They're going to hit one side, we're going to hit the other. And sure enough, we go in, we hit it simultaneously. Next thing you know, I hear pop, pop, pop. And we still clear our side. It's not shots fired on our side, you know. And then next thing you know, I hear – you know, shots fired over there, and they cleared the house, and he ended up shooting the dog. And when I say he, I'm talking about this guy right here.
Yes,
shoots the dog, you know, so it's a pit bull, right?
It was a tough dog. I'm not kidding
you. He shoots this poor drug dealer's dog, right? Yeah, I mean, just kills him dead. And there was no big deal at the time until we changed policy.
Yeah.
So they wanted to come down on us, and that's the thing about us working together. Every time we work together, like he said, it's flared up.
Yes.
So they didn't appreciate that we shot that man's dog, so they wanted to give us actually, it might have been class one initially. And then they said counseling for failure to supervise. And I was like, well, wait a minute, let me get this straight. I'm on the other side, and I'm not supervising this other supervisor, and you want to give me a reprimand for failure to supervise. I said, I'm not taking it. I'm not doing that. And sure enough, they came around. It was probably 6 months. They tried to negotiate this reprimand with me, and I just wouldn't do it. Bill calls me up. He's like, hey, Stan, just take it. He said, you know, you're pissing everybody off.
It's not worth it.
It's not worth it. The Chiefs are pissed. They want you to have this. I said, I'm not taking this. I don't even want anybody to talk to me about this again. I don't care about that dog. But, yeah, it was funny, man. We had so much fun.
I raised the red flag after the first 2 weeks. I'm like –
they say, ah, just leave that guy alone.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah, and then we had another one, too, on 16th Street that just, I mean, now this is when it shows Bill and how he trains his guys. There was this one house that we just could not get into. Do you remember? I mean, the door was fortified. So you're hitting. I think eventually you took the shotgun rounds and shot the thing. But in the meantime, we couldn't get in, and we were there.
We used Avon rounds to get in.
Yeah, we used Avon rounds to get in. But so we got – it's about 14 officers up front, and we got the house surrounded. We can't get in. I think you used Avon rounds, didn't you? Mm-hmm. But prior to that, you know, his guys, you know, they decided, okay, this is long enough. I'm sitting there. I'm trying to be patient. All of a sudden, I hear smash. His guys start picking up bricks and throwing them through the windows. I'm like, what is going on? And they're like, oh, we're just distracting them.
The SWAT rocks.
SWAT rocks. That's what we end up calling them. Calling them SWAT rocks. I said, oh, my gosh. We finally got in, you know, thanks to Bill. But, man, we've had so much fun together, you know, doing these drug raids. I've done, like, I think over 700 drug raids in my 10 years.
Yeah.
Mike's a little bit more than me because you guys are more aggressive with yours in reference to the amount of raids.
Well, between impact and gains.
Yeah, we correct.
Yeah.
But that's a lot of entries, you know. I'm sure your numbers are just as high as ours.
I mean,
you couldn't imagine, you know, us, you know, really having, you know, the presence of mind and really having the tactical mindset. You know, it's practiced daily, and that's one of the reasons why we're so good right now and how we deal with life. Because, you know, you can turn this back over to concealed carriers, and, you know, you have to really understand. You don't have to be a cop to have that mindset, you know.
No.
We talk about visualization all the time, you know.
Yeah.
We learned it in the academy, and we continue to do that all the time, even as civilians now. You know, only Mike and I can get arrested now. Major, he's good. You
know, I don't know about that.
I got to watch out for my parking tickets now. But yeah.
You retired. What was his name? I can't remember who's telling me this. He had just retired, and there's a guy from I'm blanking on his name. Blue Heron.
Bill Booth.
Bill Booth. Yep. You know, he went to his retirement party. Got all cake,
yeah.
Got his awards, yeah. Got his presentations, everybody's happy, everybody's congratulating him. He goes outside, he's got a parking ticket. He's like, that's retirement.
Exactly. He couldn't get back in to pay it because they took his car.
Like you were saying, you don't have to be a cop to have this mindset or the training. I mean, one of the things when he's telling this story with me, the thing I was thinking about, functionality of a firearm. You know, even with all this going on in the fight, one round off, he had the mindset and he had the clarity to think about that functionality of the firearm, about battery, about if one is in the chamber, you know, not chambered.
Mm.
So if he gets the firearm, this is all stuff. I mean, and, you know, talking about de-escalation, number one, just not getting involved in certain things. I think a lot of citizens who go get a concealed carry, they have a concealed carry and they think, okay, now I have a concealed carry. And, you know, we get the question a lot. I have my concealed carry. Now when could I legally shoot someone? And when we talk to people, we say, well, you really need to be thinking about at what point have I exhausted all my other options, and at what point do I have no other options but to shoot this person? That's what the thought needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some people think, well, with the firearm and a concealed carry permit, then they look at opportunities to intervene.
Mm-hmm.
When it really needs to be, and we've talked about this before, it really needs to be not even to get involved at all. You know, sometimes it's better to be a great witness and notify the police immediately than to get involved in something, because it can escalate so fast. And we've seen things escalate, you know, fast, like the deal, both of the incidents. Mm-hmm. You had. You remember when you used a full can of gas on me?
Yes.
That thing escalated.
It was partial can of gas on you.
It was a partial can. It was enough.
Yes.
That thing escalated. Raymond Goggins.
Yeah.
That thing escalated so fast.
Yeah.
And that's another thing. That was another incident with Bill, where Bill clearly could have used lethal force. The guy swung a baseball bat at you.
Yeah.
He did.
And we had like three guys in a car getting a fight with one. Every time Bill went to use the gas, the guy would duck. And
yeah, it was
I would
was
get
Bill.
Him. Get a face full of spray.
Gas.
Yeah.
You get the gas face.
And I mean, we've been in so many things and seen these things escalate that that's what I think people don't think about, and they because they don't have experience.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing we've talked about in the past, too, that we haven't talked about in a while that's probably pretty good to talk about is that police officers' intuition. Mm-hmm. Police officers have this sixth sense intuition, and they trust that based on experience.
Correct.
So they've had experience over and over again of reading people's body language, reading, I mean, you know, we used to always look at the chest,
yeah,
at the air moving, you know, when they would start getting real nervous, hands. I mean, police officers trust their intuition. And I think most people have the same intuition, but they don't trust it because they haven't had the experience with it.
Yes.
And that's one of the biggest things, you know, most people say that, you know, victims knew that this was going to happen, or they had a feeling or they had an intuition that this was going to happen, but they didn't do anything about it, mm-hmm, because they were either, they didn't have the experience to trust it. They didn't want to offend somebody.
Yeah,
they didn't want to, you know, they don't want to make something bigger than it was.
Right.
And a lot of people say, well, I didn't call the police because I didn't really think it was that big of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
And what people need to realize is, most of the time, police officers are bored off our ass sitting around waiting for a call.
Absolutely.
Now, that's not like second shift. Second shift, you're pretty much running. I was third shift, you know, most of the time. So we were all like waiting for that call, driving around in circles through our districts. But, you know, that's one of the things that people need to recognize, that intuition and
trust it.
And trust it.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. And, you know, when I think about, you know, just our everyday, and most of the time you're not going to have a violent encounter, but you're going to have encounters,
mm-hmm,
you know, with people that are just aggressive. And, you know, watching Don and Andrew talk about, you know, the difference between being threatened and being scared, you know, and most times you're afraid or you're scared, but you're not at that point where you can pull your weapon or at the point where you can take, you know, use deadly force. So you have to be able to understand and practice, what do I do when I'm afraid, and how do I adjust to, you know, exit this situation without force being used. You know, if you go back and you look at the that tape just prior to, you know, the officer, mm-hmm, you know, getting grabbed.
Yep.
You know, now he did put his hand up a few times, but this guy was well within his personal space.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even when he was, you know, just walking up initially, and the secondary officer, you know, although, you know, she stood back and at an angle, you know, it looked like, and this is my first time looking at this video, and I didn't watch it through too many times, but, you know, when they were actually on the ground, I see her pull something out, and it looked like a taser. Now, I couldn't tell if it was or not, or some type of, you know, secondary weapon. You know, she should have had that out initially, you know, depending on how aggressive the guy was. Make sure you call for backup. And this also goes along, not with just police, but, you know, with citizens as well. When you see something happening, call the police first. Start your backup, because that's pretty much what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So call the police first to get them going, even if it's road rage, whatever the case may be. I mean, you're trying to be a good witness. Sometimes you become an involved person. It's better to be a witness than an involved person, because involved person, especially sometimes, your actions will be seen as escalating the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've seen this escalating situation, you have to use deadly force, you might find yourself in prison.
That's a good point, Stan, and I was going to make that point. Watching the video, we have, it's as being a commander, I do this a lot of time because we have body-worn cameras. You know, we have the luxury of watching a video at time. We can stop it. We can look at it. We can make decisions. It's hard to second-guess an officer on that, and I would never second-guess those guys in that deal. But, you know, for critique purposes, you can look at it. Is the first thing that I noticed, you know, he was definitely getting in personal space.
Mm-hmm.
First thing you should do is call backup right away.
Yeah.
Because then you got the cavalry coming, and then if something happens, you don't have to worry about having to call while you're in a confrontation with somebody.
Correct.
So that was a good point. Second point you made is that when you're a civilian and you're a concealed carry owner, the bad guy might already have a plan.
That's
most
right.
of them do. And in the military, they teach you speed, surprise, violence of action. That's what the bad guys usually run with.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you're not prepared to react, because you can't initially start it with the weapon, obviously. If that bad guy makes his move with speed, surprise, violence, action, what are you going to do at that point?
That's right.
If you don't have a plan, you're not ready to go. So that's why it's important to not intervene unless it's definitely necessary, because bad guys have a plan. They don't just off the cuff do stuff.
And one thing you talked about too, calling police initially already covers you if something does happen. It shows that you took that action first.
That's right.
That what your first action wasn't to get involved in this.
Yeah.
Your first action was to notify the police, and then whatever happened, happened.
Absolutely.
So that's it's kind of like we talked about. We've talked about this in the past of removing the ambiguity, what Andrew Branca talks about, which I love the way he describes that, because removing that ambiguity, if you have, you know, if you have somebody, you're at a parking lot or a gas station at night, nobody else is around, and somebody's approaching you and you don't know them, and if you don't tell them, stop, come any closer, I don't got, you know, I don't have it. If you don't remove that ambiguity immediately, then if they continue, then you've already told them to stop. You've given them commands. You don't want anything. You don't want them to come any closer. If they come any closer, then that gives you one more step. If you get in a car, shut the door, and then they try to get in the car, that gives you one more step.
That's right.
And so by not removing the ambiguity and letting somebody come up on you or walk up on you or whatever without telling them to stop, it just gives you that much more, I don't want to say coverage, it gives you that much more, you know, I don't know what other word for it, coverage if something happens.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, what I believe you're trying to say is that your actions are going to seem more reasonable.
Right,
you know,
right.
Once you remove that, you know, because then it's like, okay, instead of you not saying anything and allowing the person to walk up, and then, you know, they're pulling out their phone and say, hey, my GPS won't work, and you shoot them. And, you know, I mean, but if you say stop, stay back, like I'm in the habit of, and like, I don't know why I get all these, when I lived in California, of course, all the aggressive panhandlers are there.
Yeah.
And they don't just sit around with a cardboard. They catch you at the gas pump.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm always watching, you know, my head's on a swivel, but I always have like certain things that I say. One is I don't want any, right?
Mm-hmm.
Before they even start talking. And the second one is, what story do you have to tell me that I don't care about? Once you do that, they know that you're really not the person to deal with. I'm not acting friendly. I'm not afraid to offend people.
Yeah.
You know, I do it because I don't want anybody in my personal space. But you stop them just beyond your personal space. And because if you think about two arms distance, that's how far you want somebody, you know, away from you, you know, so that you can actually respond to a threat.
Absolutely. And you're not only removing the ambiguity. Ambiguity. Thank you.
That's not a Northeast word.
No.
Stick an R in it.
You're removing that. but you're also, it's twofold. You're letting him know that you're prepared for something.
Right.
And that's the key to most of it, is if you're prepared, they're not really interested in a hard target. They're looking for a soft target.
Right.
So you notice them immediately, make eye contact, and tell them stop. Like you said, that's an excellent idea for any type of deal. And then if they continue coming, you know, then you know it's more serious than you.
That's right. You know, and I think it was like maybe 20 years ago, you helped in a study or you watched a bunch of videos.
No, I actually interviewed.
You interviewed people, didn't you? Tell us about that, because it's very important.
So that was back, in the early mid 90s maybe. And what we interviewed, we were doing, Mike Kelly and I were doing these courses for these hospitals and nurses on basically how to not get involved or not become a victim. And most of it was actually just knowledge.
Yeah.
Part of it was actually physical, you know, techniques. But we interviewed convicted sex offenders who had agreed to go into a counseling program in prison. And we interviewed them and asked them what they looked for. And we had a list of questions, but it was like, you know, things of what you look for when you're picking a victim, how do you approach the victim, you know, and one of the questions was, and most of them would say that they would look for people who were not paying attention, that were not making, you know, the, like the, we're talking about, not making eye contact, not giving him any, you know, stop commands. People who weren't paying attention. The second thing was, how do you approach? Almost all of them tried to approach, tried to build confidence. Mm-hmm. Hey, excuse me, you know what time it is? Or, hey, can I ask you a question? You know, building confidence quickly. And then the last question we asked them was, at what point would, if it actually turned physical, at what point would you
back off?
Would you give up? Mm-hmm. And all of them except for one said that they would give up at the first sign of a fight. Mm-hmm. Because they didn't want to, because there was an easy victim somewhere
soft
else,
targets.
Just like you're talking
soft
about.
Targets.
There's an easy victim around the corner, they'll give up. Only one guy said that he would fight harder
yeah.
if they fought back. So that was pretty, and there were, I think there were over 50 in this group that we had interviewed, and we actually had a list, and we had them, you know, write out everything. I think I still have those.
Yeah.
I'll try to find those. But, yeah, it was huge because, like Bill said, there's always somebody who's going to be a victim somewhere.
That's right.
And
yeah.
they're pretty close. And if you look around today, everybody's doing this.
That's right.
When they're walking out to their car.
I was going to mention that. I bet you your survey was pre-cell phone.
It was pre-cell phone. Oh, yeah.
Now it's ridiculous. You can,
oh, yeah.
I mean, they have no situational awareness at
no,
all.
No, no.
And that's bad for police, too, civilians and police. You'll see police officers
oh, yeah.
buried in that phone, mm-hmm. parked somewhere, and that's just the
yeah.
most dangerous thing you can do.
Yep.
As a civilian, same thing. You're just not aware of your surroundings. Your situational awareness have gone away, mm-hmm. and you are now a victim. You're a potential
yep.
victim.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard. I know, because I was in New York City a couple weeks ago, and I was trying to find location, you know, trying to find, use the maps. And that's one thing when I'm traveling, I try to get, you know, I use maps a lot, but I try to get the location. I try to get it to where I don't have to look at it on the street. But it's hard
yeah, it
when
is.
You're in a place mm-hmm. like that. So just things to keep in mind. I think the biggest thing that we wanted to talk about today was how fast things can escalate mm-hmm. and the importance of not getting involved. We talked about last weekend. So last week we kind of did a new thing where we talked about key takeaways.
Yes.
So, and I started last week. So Stan's going to start this week about
right.
key takeaways nice. Of this discussion. And let's just do one key takeaway.
I guess the main thing, the main takeaway this week is going to be mindset and preparedness. So I just think that, you know, regardless of what you talk about, you know, be it a situation like that when someone's approaching you, or you just your everyday, you know, interactions, you know, be mindful of your surroundings, be aware of your surroundings.
Bill?
I would say keep calm, as calm as you can be when something comes down. That way you keep your wits about you and you can think your way through stuff.
Yeah.
Situational awareness is important.
Which is tough.
Think your way through, yes.
Tough to be able to think your way through when something is actively going. I think mine would be planning, pre-planning, and I'm not saying for any certain thing, but have a plan for everything. Have a plan that if you notice something, immediately notify police. If you have somebody with you that can notify, if it's something that, like we talked about, these things escalate so quickly. If something is escalating very quickly, get somebody else to call the police. But have a plan to... you know, try to be the best witness you can, avoid all you can, and de-escalate all you can. So, in closing, we'll let this kind of fade out, but I am going to tell the story of Goggins, because this is a good story. This would be a good way to end this in this podcast. So we go out, we saw, this was when we were in Impact still, right?
We were going out to do a recon for
yeah.
a warrant. That's all we're doing.
Yeah. And
that's
we
what
see,
supposed to be doing.
We
that's
see
it.
The guy, we see a carload, and we notice
hand
the
to hand.
Yeah. So we go out on him. I think Bill gets, we always go one side, the other.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember who was where, but got the driver out and immediately started fighting. So we have both of us. I get behind the guy. I'm trying to control his arms. He's got a t-shirt on. It's summer. He's sweating. Every time you know, Bill pulls out his gas because it's the newest thing that we had back then.
Brand new tool.
Pulls out the gas, and every time he sticks his hands up, the guy's like dodging and he's spraying me. Faithful.
You know, I'm still working on
it. So next thing I know, the guy's shirt comes off. I have his shirt. Whoa, he rips out, takes off running. I'm holding his shirt, using it to try to clean myself off. Bill takes off after him.
Yeah.
Well, as he takes off after him, the other two get out of the car. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to get a hold of this being dosed with probably three times of gas. Yes. And luckily, one of them takes off. The other guy kind of squares up. So I think I hit my
– I can still hear.
Okay. So the other guys kind of square off. He takes off, luckily. Take off, chase him, catch him, get him cuffed up, bring him back to the car, throw him in the car, take off through the neighborhood, and I'm trying to listen for Bill. So I come around the corner, and I hear Bill yelling on this porch. Mm. So I slam it in park, jump out of the car, grab my handheld, and as I grab my handheld, it like slips out of my hand and goes that way, and Bill is this way.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, screw the handheld.
Yeah.
I run over there. I remember he had the guy, and I think he might have had.
I hip tossed him and got mine on him.
Yeah. And then I got his leg wrapped in mine, got him in a knee bar.
Yeah.
Every time, let's just say he got gassed again.
Yeah.
And so finally get him handcuffed, get him in custody. And the fire department comes out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, goodness.
With the pool to clean us off. Mm-hmm. And
I was on fire, basically. We had to hop a couple fences. I might have torn my jeans.
Yeah. He might have torn crotch out.
Oh, actually, it was my raid pants because we were doing a recon. Yeah. And I might have torn the crotch out of it. And once I got him in mount, I might have did a inventory to make sure nothing was injured.
And you had gas.
I didn't realize I had gas all over my hands, all over him. And then the fire started. Yeah.
Yeah.
So a fireman gave me a couple of nice cold packs and then I had to go to the hospital.
All right. Thanks a lot, Red Bush.
Yeah, exactly.
So the burning bush.
Fire down below. It was hot.
Oh, man. And then what was worse for me is when I get back and get in the hot shower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After that.
Never had
the pores open. Oh, man. Everything started burning again. Anyways, this is a good story. It was a good, yeah. It was a good arrest. Oh, but the best part was as he comes around the corner. Mm-hmm. So he's chasing the guy. The guy runs around the corner, and of course, on the east side, every backyard has a baseball bat laying right there by the back porch.
Well, of course.
So the guy grabs a baseball bat, and he's standing posted up, kind of hiding behind this corner. And as Bill comes around, he jumps out and takes a swing at Bill.
Yeah.
Luckily, Bill
dodged it.
Dodged it.
A little Matrix.
Come
action.
On, Matrix.
Oh, yeah. I'd like to see that on a body cam.
That would have been nice because that was – he did try to give it all he had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lost the bat, took off running again, luckily.
Wow.
But, yeah, it was a good – that was we got some good stuff
that was a
that
good
too.
One. Yeah, he had a lot of dope on him.
Yeah.
He
dumped.
Well, thank you, sir.
So that's the
– Major.
That's the story.
Thank you. It was fun being back with you guys.
I know. We miss you.
I miss you guys.
All right, you guys stay safe, and we'll see you next week.
All right, be safe.